Does anyone remember anything from yesterday's talk? This is always the most difficult of all questions. Even does anyone remember anything from 1 hour ago? It's a difficult question. What the speaker of yesterday did you? He couldn't learn Brahma. With his intelligence that's empowered by Krishna, practically speaking, it is Krishna has given him that intelligence to create. It's Krishna's potency. Still, he could not penetrate and understand Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, because Krishna was sitting. It was his picnic pastimes that really bewildered him. It was Krishna's picnic pastimes. He was just playing with the coward boys. And Brahma could not understand this, because his concept of the Supreme Lord naturally was full one of he has all the power and I am completely reverent to him. This was his concept of the supreme of the, his worshipable Lord. He is all powerful. He knew. Brahma knew that he himself had come from the Supreme Lord, and he was the secondary creator of the universe. See, Atra Saga Vasagra Cha. He is the Saga creator of the universe. Krishna creates in the form of Mahavishnu, Karana Nakshay Vishnu. He creates all the ingredients. But Brahma is the one who assembles them. But Brahma knew, after taking his birth, he knew that he didn't have the power to assemble the ingredients by himself. He didn't know where to begin. And therefore, the universal form has to be created. He has to perform tapasya. The universal form is something like the documentation for the universe. It shows what to do, where everything should be put. Everything should be placed. So, the blueprint almost. So, Krishna had to create that even after all the ingredients were created. And then, so Brahma was able to, with his piercing intelligence, he was able to read this documentation by the potency of Krishna. Without the potency of Krishna, he couldn't do that. So, there he was with his concept of the Supreme Lord is so grand, is so powerful. And there Krishna was, eating with his cowherd boyfriends on the bank of the river, and playing and putting food in each other's mouth, and laughing and teasing each other. And sometimes the boys would cry, and sometimes Krishna himself would cry. And this pastime specifically, our acharyas say, what to speak of the perception of the Rasalila pastimes. But this pastime specifically bewildered him. How is it possible that the Lord, the Param Ishwara, what does Ishwara mean? Controller, and that's the translation usually given from the English word God to the Sanskrit. It's Ishwara, controller. And Parameshwara, the supreme control. How is it possible that he's sitting there with his friends and performing these activities? So let me, with my potency, with my intelligence, Brahma said, let me, I didn't use this term, let me poke Krishna in his pastimes and see how he reacts. Something similar happened on one level, a different level too, but on one level this is what happened with Bhrigu Muni. That happens in the, I think, the 89th chapter of the 10th canto. Bhrigu Muni wanted to poke Lord Vishnu Krishna to see how he'd react. And he poked him with his foot, kicked him. And Lord Vishnu, he acted with the supreme tolerance. And he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry that your soft, tender foot has hit my hard chest. I hope it wasn't injured." But he poked him just to see how it would. He tested him. So Brahma tested Krishna. I want to see how he's going to react. So he took away first the calves, because cow in Sanskrit is go, and that also means the senses. And as the senses tend to wander, cows tend to wander also. And as the senses need, as the cows need a cowherdsman to control them, the senses need good intelligence to control them, actually. But for that reason, because they both tend to wander, both are called go, the senses and cows. They tend to wander because they're always on the go. Maybe there's some cross-language meaning in that. Or maybe not. So Brahma took the cows wanted. He influenced the cows by the mercy, by the arrangement, not of his power, actually, but by the power of Krishna's yogamaya, Krishna's internal energy, Krishna's personal energy that arranges Krishna's pastimes. And then we mentioned yesterday that there's one comment by Sri Jiva Goswami or Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, that while eating, Krishna wanted, he was a little bored. He wanted some a little bit of excitement to happen. So therefore, Krishna's internal energy arranged a pastime. And at the same time satisfied Lord Brahma, his desire to find out something about Krishna. And at the same time did so many things. And this is how Krishna acts. With one action, he does so many things. So many wonderful things. With one action. So we may see what Krishna does on one level, but there's unlimited levels. Because he's the Supreme Lord. He's unlimitedly powerful. He's unlimitedly intelligent. He's unlimitedly charming. And he's the unlimitedly great teacher. So he's teaching so many things by every pastime. He's teaching unlimited things by his activities. There's unlimited depth to his activities. So therefore, right in the beginning of this pastime, Sukadev Maharaj Prickett was so eager, even though he may know these pastimes, and maybe Sukadev knows these pastimes, there's unlimited depth to them. So because Maharaj Prickett heard this with such enthusiasm, it was clear that he was tasting newer and newer levels of depth, or you could say height, depending upon which way you look at it, because these are the deepest and the highest also. So Brahma poked Krishna, so to speak, by his using his own power. He took away the calves, and then when Krishna, even though he knew it was Lord Brahma who had done this, because after all he knows everything, but sometimes we can say his consciousness was so much in the mood of a coward boy consciousness that he didn't perceive. But he knew it was Brahma, but he wanted to allow Brahma's bewilderment to be complete. Yes, he doesn't know what I've done. That increases. So this happens to all of us in the material world. We see a part of something, and we think that part is the entirety. Because Krishna likes to keep his, like all of us, we keep our secrets well hidden. So Krishna keeps his secrets very well hidden too. And his secrets is, we're going to find out in one sense, Krishna's deepest secret in this pastime. So Brahma became a little bit, yes, a bewildered Krishna. He became a little proud. But he was wondering too, because he had seen Krishna kill Agasura. But he was wondering, what is Krishna going to do when I've taken away the boys and the calves? What's he going to do? Is he going to do some magic? Something wonderful? Create a very wonderful pastime? By displaying great potency? Or is he going to wander around looking for the boys and calves that I've hidden? And not be able to find them? Or will he be able to find them? Or will he eventually come to me and request me to please give me back the boys and calves? He was unsure of Krishna's power, of what was the extent of Krishna's power. How is he going to react to this? And this unsurety, this sort of doubt, in one sense, that one could say that it's like the beginning of bhakti. Not that Brahma was already a great devotee, but when one, for a materialist, he hears about, oh, there's a Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord's he has a personality, and how could this be? But wait a second, maybe there is some truth in that. So that doubting one's own consciousness and surety in one's own self is the beginning, because that causes one to try to find out if there's anything deeper than what one knows oneself. As long as one is very compact and sure in one's illusion that what I know is truth. And how do I know it's truth? Because what else could it be? I know it. And anyone who doesn't see things the way that I see things, it's obvious that they don't. If they knew what I knew, they would certainly completely agree with me. This is the way every materialistic person thinks. This is, it's very, their false ego is very complete. And that's what every materialistic person tries to do. He tries to make no holes in his illusion. But of course, there are so many holes in everyone's illusion, because it's illusion, after all. Illusion, reality is reality. Reality is real and illusion is false. So how could you have a foolproof illusion? How could you have an illusion that can't be pierced? So, you know, that's such an interesting topic. If you look at the different countries of the world and how everyone's saying my country is the best and we are right and we are correct, and anyone who opposes us or has a different opinion, they are wrong. And then just the things that they criticize every other country for, they end up doing to a worse degree themselves. Because this is the nature of illusion. And that's actually an interesting... If you want to find out what your faults are, your own faults, just see what really disturbs you in others. Just look and see what really... When someone does... You know, we can tolerate so many things that people do, but then when someone does one particular thing, it really disturbs us. And those things that disturb us and others are generally something to do with the faults that we ourselves have, trying to cover it over. But the nature of the universe connecting with our false ego is it reveals what our own faults are in this way. Atmavan manyate jagat. Because we're not actually seeing the faults of others, or we're not actually seeing the world as it is. We're not actually seeing reality. We're actually seeing our mind's conceptions projected over the world. So in any case, Brahma was wondering, how is Krishna going to react to this? Now, when Krishna was unable to find the calves and their caretakers, that's the boys, the coward boys, anywhere in the forest, he could suddenly understand that this was the work of Lord Brahma. So we read Prabhupada's comment there yesterday. Therefore, just to create pleasure both for Brahma and the mothers of the calves and the coward boys, Krishna, the creator of the entire cosmic manifestation, expanded himself as calves and boys. He wanted to bewilder Brahma more and more. And from that bewilderment, because sometimes we're in so much illusion about something, and then suddenly we understand that this has all been false. I've made it up, practically speaking, or I've been tricked. And there are different ways to react to that. And one way to react is we become angry. But another way to react is that we become humble. And in Brahma's case, he became humble, understood his foolishness, and he surrendered to Krishna, appreciating the greatness of Krishna, the inconceivable greatness of Krishna. And he became blissful in that way because it brought him closer to Krishna. And whatever brings us closest to Krishna will cause happiness and bliss in us ultimately. So, Eko Bahu Sham, the one became many. Krishna became many, many boys and calves, and he expanded himself. So by his Vasudev feature, we read this verse, and we didn't read Prabhupada's purport yesterday, but today we shall read Prabhupada's purport. By his Vasudev feature, Krishna simultaneously expanded himself into the exact number of missing cowherd boys and calves, with their exact bodily features, their particular type of hands, legs, and other parts of their body, their sticks, their bugles, their flutes, their lunch bags. He expanded himself into all these things. Their particular types of dress and ornaments placed in various ways, the way they could, because everyone wears their dress, their clothes in a particular way, and they put on their ornaments in a particular way. Everyone, we were individuals. So Krishna exactly expanded himself into the boys and calves, and he had the exact same individual characteristics as each of the boys and each of the calves. Now, even animals are individuals. Even flies are individuals. Did you notice that? You ever notice that flies are individuals? Did you ever notice that? It's true. I've noticed it. Sometimes there's certain flies. Because when flies, the problem with flies is that they get in and they can't figure out how to get out again, because after all, they're not. Really teeny brains, fly brains. So, and some of them I see just fly around trying to figure out how to get out, but others get really angry at the biggest person in the room. It happens to be me a lot of the time. And they go, you ever notice that? But all flies don't do that. Did you ever notice that? Did you ever notice that? I'm the only person they go. Did anyone ever notice that? Some flies, they sort of get angry at the biggest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, you admit it. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're talking about flies now. What is there's other things about ants. Ants are definitely more group conscious than flies. if you disturb ants as a group, they become angry at you. Did you ever notice that? Yeah. And you can feel their anger sometimes. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah.
I mean, ants, I mean, it's just like people. I mean, like in a community of people, if one person gets attacked, the whole community, why have they done this to us? And they feel, why is me and our group like that? And monkeys are like that too. We're not different from ants. If you attack a baby monkey in a big family, they get so, the whole group comes, you know, and we do that whole thing with the ears and everything. And they all make those noises, and the big ones, and the big ones come out with the muscles, and especially a few of them come out and get in trouble. Those monkeys, the big ones who have been to the gym, who go to the gym every day, are really heavy. They're heavy. So each, they're all individuals, all because the soul is an individual and the body they inhabit, they're all individuals. So the ornaments dressed in Krishna exactly expanded himself with full individuality. And by expanding himself into this way, beautiful Krishna proved the statement, Samagra Jagat Vishnu Mayam. Lord Vishnu is all pervading. He's expanded everywhere. His potency. Now here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 5.33 Advaitamachuttamanadhiranancharupam adhyam purana purusham navayovanamcha. Krishna, Param Brahma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is adhyam, the beginning of everything. He is adipurusham, the ever-youthful original person. He can expand himself in more forms than one can imagine. Yet, he does not fall down from his original form as Krishna. Therefore, he is called Achyuta. So, he has unlimited potency. This is what it means that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarvakaranam Karanam. That we look up in the sky and we see so many planets. He expands. This is just the energy of the Supreme Lord. And this is in one universe, and there are so many universes. And then there's the spiritual world. And there's everything. Everything that exists and doesn't exist, non-existence, is also an expansion of Krishna. Because he is the absolute truth. That's what it means, the Param Satyam. That means nothing is outside of him. Everything is included within him. And everything is an expansion of his energies. Even though there is individuality and independence, still is an expansion of his energy. So he can expand himself in more forms than we can imagine. But yet he does not fall down from his original form as Krishna, therefore he is called Achyuta. So although he's expanded everywhere, he still is an individual. And he still keeps his own individual characteristics. This is power. Because if we expend, say our powers, our whatever finances we have in the bank, if we expand it into buying things, then the amount we have in the bank is lessened. But Krishna, he has unlimited, this is inconceivably unlimited potency. So because he is expanded into everything, he still remains an unlimitedly powerful supreme person. An example is given with like the ocean. So you can take so much out of the ocean. You take out so much water out of the ocean, but the ocean doesn't decrease at all. Or you can add so much into the ocean and the ocean doesn't increase. That's gives us a material example of vastness, or the sun. The sun for millions of years has been giving off its light and heat, and it hasn't decreased at all. So what to speak of the original source of everything? This is what we mean when we say Krishna is God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's unlimited. Nothing is external to him. Nothing is outside of him. Everything expands. Everything in existence. There is nothing in existence that doesn't have Krishna as its source. But yet he's a person, an unlimited person with a transcendental form. With a form, and the fact that he has a form, it doesn't limit him. He has a form that's unlimited. So according to the way that the material finite mind works, that's a contradiction, a form that's unlimited. Because when we think of form, it's here, the form or the form of the microphone stand. It's here, and if it's here, it has a border. There's a place where the microphone stand begins, and there's a place where the microphone stand ends. Anything that has a form has borders. So if it has a border, that means that there's somewhere where it ends. And if there's somewhere where it ends, then it's not unlimited. But Krishna has a form, and his form has borders, and yet it is unlimited. That's called an inconceivable potency. He's everything, but still he's personally different. Krishna thus proved that he is everything, that he can become everything, but that still he is personally different from everything. Matstani sarvabhutani nacham tesh avastitaha. This is Krishna, that he's everything, but yet he's different. He defines the word everyone, and not, I don't know if it's still used, but a few years ago, the word awesome. Everyone, every person, you couldn't be a bona fide teenager unless you always said awesome. Wow. But Krishna is awesome. If we get a glimpse of how powerful, of what we mean when we say that he's unlimitedly powerful, it fills one with awe and reverence. And that is a very good first start in spiritual life, to be filled with awe and reverence, because then our pride goes away. And pride, the absence of pride or humility, is required in spiritual life, because we have to submit. We have to submit and understand who we are, as we are servants of this Supreme Personality. Still, he proved he is everything, that he can become everything, but that still he's personally different from everything. This is Krishna, who is understood by Achinta Ved Abed Tattva philosophy. Punasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vasisyate. Krishna is always complete. And although he can create millions of universes, all of them full in opulence, he remains as opulent as ever without any change in Dvaitam. He never loses. He can give off, like the sun, so much energy continuously, but never diminish. So when we look up in the sky and see the stars, if we can pierce the clouds, then we should, and sometimes when one's deep into the, away from a city, and you look up at night and you see the stars, it's so vast. You just think, wow, here I am in my little world of my own little bubble of consciousness, thinking that I'm very important. And then I look up and see there's so much vastness and so many planets and up there. That means that I'm insignificant. Or even just when one stands by the shore of the ocean. That's why men always like this. They like to stand by the shore of the ocean. and they just stare out into the ocean, and it does something to their consciousness. It makes them feel insignificant, and it's almost spiritual. But the feeling one's insignificance when confronted with reality is very healthy. But because we're insignificant doesn't mean we don't exist. And as soon as that the insignificant, the tiny soul, sees itself in relationship with the significant, if we are cut off from the significant, which means Krishna, then we are insignificant. But as soon as we are in relationship to the significant, we become significant also. We are a servant of the significant. We are the insignificant servant of the significant. And when the insignificant servant of the significant, he can do something wonderful because he's backed by the significant, by Krishna. He remains opulent as ever without any change. This is explained by different Vaishnava acharyas through philosophies such as Vishuddha Dvaita, Vishishta Dvaita, and Dvaita Dvaita, the philosophies of the different Vaishnava acharyas. Therefore, one must learn about Krishna from the acharyas, because we are so insignificant. If we try to learn about the absolute truth using our finite and insignificant brain, we can only come up with an approximate, at best, of what the absolute truth is. Because we're so tiny. So we have to learn from the great realized souls. And those persons who have learned in this way, such persons can know Krishna as he is, at least to some extent. Because we cannot, it's not possible for the insignificant to fully understand the significant. We cannot. We can only understand what he reveals to us, what he allows us to understand. Such a person can know Krishna as he is, at least to some extent. And as soon as one understands Krishna, janma karma chame divyam evam yo vetti tatvata, as soon as one understands Krishna to some degree, accurately, one is liberated from material bondage. Takfadayam punajanma naiti mameti suajna. So in that verse, Srila Sukadeva was describing how Krishna had expanded himself in Prabhupada's purport. Explained how Krishna was the same. And not only did he expand himself into the cowherd boys and calves, there is nothing that is external to him. Everything is but an expansion of him. So 20. Now expanding himself so as to appear as all the calves and cowherd boys, all of them as they were, and at the same time appearing as their leader, he still kept his individual existence. Then, with all the cows, calves, and all the boys, and himself, he entered the leader of the calves and boys. He entered Brother Bhumi.
Sayam Atmana Govatsan Prativar Yatma Vatspai Kridad Atma Viharascha Savatma Pravisad Vrajam.
Pravisad means he entered. Savatma, that supreme soul. He entered Vrajabhumi, he entered Vrindavan, he entered his home. He entered Vrajabhumi, the land of his father, Nandamad. So, on one hand, look how we're always confronted with the inconceivable. He's just expanded, just explaining how everything is an expansion of him and unlimited universes come from him. So then he's expanded himself into cows and boys, and even though he has a form, he's unlimited. Then he entered Raja, the home of his father. Now how can this unlimited source of everything have a father? And how could that father have some land? So it's not a metaphor, it's not a story. This is that Krishna thinks of himself. Of course, there's two ways to look at everything. One from the point of view of tattva, and the other from the point of view of rasa. Tattva means from the philosophical point of view of the truth. And then from the point of view of rasa means the loving exchanges that are going on. So which one is higher? The philosophical point of view or the rasa point of view? So if you ask the philosophers, they'll tell you the tattva point of view is the highest. Like Narada Muni, he sees when he goes to Vrindavan, he sees so many things that the Brijvasis don't see. So we would think that a person who is so knowledgeable that he's seeing things, all the philosophy that's going on, he knows more and his position is therefore higher. But his position isn't higher. Because how do we, his position is actually lower than the Brijvasis, even though they don't, all they see is, this is my boy, Krishna. I was so proud of him. Did you see the way he killed that big demon? Oh, he's so wonderful. He's so charming. So they're so infatuated with Krishna. Their love for Krishna is everything for them. And because when there's love, you don't see everything accurately. Prabhupada told how there's this... his mother had a blind son who couldn't see and his eyes were somewhat deformed. And she called him Padmalochan, which means lotus-eyed. But he didn't have eyes, practically speaking, but because she's a mother and her vision was full of love, she called him Padmalochan. Lotus-eyed one. Because love taints our vision. Our consciousness taints our, it changes our vision. When we're in one mood, we see everything in one way. And when we're in another mood, we see everything in another way. We're not seeing reality as it is at any time. We don't see with our eyes, we see with our mind. Not that our eyes don't see anything, but it's really our mind providing conceptions that categorizes what we see into one, to be this pleasing, displeasing, etc. So he entered, Krishna entered. So which is higher, the vision of Narada Muni or the vision, or a materialist? Here's a person who has, or doesn't have the sanskaras or the impressions or the advancement when you hear about Vrindavan. Or something. Oh, this is some mythology or some story or something like that. So he's hearing the same thing and he sees it in one way. And then there's a devotee may think, oh, I'm not so sure about this Vrindavan stuff. And someone else may see it and this is just to focus your mind on one place so that you can understand that God is everything and he's all-pervading and there's no form. And Narada Muni sees the leelas going on, the pastimes of Krishna going on, and he thinks, this is so wonderful that the absolute truth who knows everything is acting in this way, and I'm seeing it, and I see that they're bewildered by Krishna's energy, their love, and I'm seeing so many things that there are no husbands for the wives, and things like that. And then there are the resident Mother Yasoda is just thinking, oh, this boy is so restless. He's always running everywhere. What happens? And she sees that Nanda Maharaj took Krishna out when he was herding the cows. When Nanda Maharaj was, before Krishna became a, this is one of the reasons Krishna was allowed to take care of the calves, because when Nanda Maharaj was going out with the cows, Krishna went along. He couldn't keep them back because he was from a cowherd family. He loved the cows so much. And that's the way boys are anyway. They like to run around and get away from their mothers. When they hit a certain age, they want to run around and be with their friends. So while he was with Nanda Maharaj, he and Balaram used to take out the big, big cows, and they were so little, maybe this big. And they would take out the cows, and they would practice herding the cows, five or six cows, they were big cows they would take out themselves, and Krishna would hold them by the horns and stop them from running. And if Mother Yasoda saw this, and she said Nanda Maharaj, however she called him, is this proper that such a little boy should be doing these things? She's trying to, and her heart is beating and so much anxiety, because she's seeing this absolute truth in a way that's so covered by her love. She cannot see her love, and she's just seeing him as this boy. This boy is so, he's so delicate. His hands are soft. His feet are soft. So whose vision is most accurate? Whose vision of reality is most accurate? So there's no question of it being accurate. It's a matter of what Krishna is allowing one to see of him. So due to Mother Yasoda, so instead of asking which vision is most accurate, from the tattva point of view, we see that, Narada Muni's vision is accurate. But from the point of view of rasa, who's giving Krishna the most pleasure, then we see that the resonance of Vrindavan's vision is the highest, is the best. So this has a mixture of the two, of the tattva and the rasa. Now expanding himself is to appear as all the calves and cowherd boys. That's from the tattva. It's Krishna who's done this. All of them as they were, and at the same time appearing as their leader, Krishna entered Brajabhumi, the land of his father Nanda Maharaj, just as he usually did, while enjoying their company. So this is something that we have to accept, that Krishna enjoyed the company of his mother and father, and because he is the supreme enjoyer, everything is meant for his enjoyment. It's not meant for our enjoyment. If we want to enjoy, if we make it the purpose of our life to enjoy the company of our mother and father, at one point we're going to be very disappointed. Our hearts will break when our mother and father leave this world, or we'll become ill. And then there's separation. But from, in Krishna's dealing with the devotees, the separation causes intimacy of being with him. Mm-hmm. On a different level. So Krishna was at this time entered Vrindavan, but it was him as the cows and the calves and the boys, not just as usual, but not actually as usual, because usually it was the boys and the calves who entered. So here's Prabhupada's purport. Krishna usually stayed in the forest and pasturing ground, taking care of the calves and cows with his associates, the cowherd boys. Now that the original group had been taken away by Brahma, Krishna himself assumed the forms of every member of the group without anyone's knowledge, even the knowledge of Baladev, and continued the usual program. He was ordering his friends to do this and that, and he was controlling the calves and going into the forest to search for them when they went astray, allured by new grass. But these calves and boys were he himself. This was Krishna's inconceivable potency. As explained by Srila Jiva Goswami, Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikriti Ladini Shakti Rasmad. Radha and Krishna are the same. Krishna, by expanding his pleasure potency, becomes Radharani. The same pleasure potency, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, was expanded by Krishna when he himself became all the calves and boys and enjoyed transcendental bliss in Vrajabhumi. This was done by the Yogamaya potency and was inconceivable to persons under the potency of Mahamaya. So we, being tiny, we always need a shelter. So either we get sheltered by Krishna's internal energy or his external energy. When we're sheltered by his external energy, it means we have turned our back on Krishna. And we are in Maya, illusion. And we're seeing ourselves as if we are the center. And we're not seeing Krishna anywhere, although he is everywhere. And when we are sheltered by the internal energy, we are in relationship with Krishna. And that's what we want to be, in relationship with Krishna, as opposed to with our back turned to Krishna. Krishna bhule se jivanadiyam bahiyam. Back turned to Krishna means out of relationship with Krishna. And facing Krishna means in relationship to Krishna. So that's the purpose of our practices of bhakti, to be in relationship to Krishna, to see everything in relationship to Krishna, because everything in fact has relationship to Krishna. Everything. There is nothing external to Krishna. So all what Krishna was doing, Brahma could not understand it, because he was under the influence of the external energy. But actually Krishna was allowing him to do it, because this is Vrindavan, so all this is going on by the internal energy. So now there are some verses that describe what happened when Krishna, as the cowherd boy from cows, enters Vrindavan. Omar's Prakrit. Krishna, who had divided himself as different calves and also as different cowherd boys, entered different cow sheds as the calves, and then different homes as different boys. So it's sometimes when it's time to go out to herd the calves in the morning, that all the boys come out of their individual houses, and all the cows come out in their different groups. And then they become like a big, big group of boys and calves. And they go out, and the boys are blowing their bugles and playing their flutes and laughing and playing. And the whole village of Vrindavan comes out to see them off. And the calves are bouncing around and walking out. And then when they come back as a big group. And then the boys go into their individual houses, and the calves go into the cow shed. And how do the calves know which cow shed to go in? Does anyone ever watch the cows going home? Do they have cows in Mauritius? Do they come home? Did you ever see any cows when it's time to come home?
Do we have driven cows?
Yes?
When they were staying in the shed.
Okay. No pasture. And how did they get fed?
We get grass for them.
So did they have any place to go out and exercise?
No, unfortunately.
Next time you have to get them some place to exercise too. Otherwise they won't be happy.
Nowadays it's all being run by the government. There they are. They do inside.
And Nepal? But I thought Nepal is all hills and everything. How do they? What?
They come naturally. They come back home. They know where to go, exactly.
And exactly on time also?
Exactly on time.
And how do they know?
Natural instinct.
I think they get hungry. Maybe, but they know just when to come home. And then if they get home and there's no food or something, they start complaining. Mm. Yes? In their own cow-like way. But, ooh, they start complaining in a group.
They can't even recognize the owner, you know that.
Were you telling me that before you left, that the cows around the house, someone was telling me, was it you? They only would let one person feed them when they're growing up. Maybe it was. There was one person in the house, and the cows wouldn't accept food from anyone but him.
They become sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They know who is looking after them.
Yeah. And they like this one, they don't. Could that possibly be instinct? Because when instinct is what the scientists say, when they want to say that they have no souls, cows don't have souls, so they say everything is instinct, and it has to do with survival. Doesn't make any sense. Because there's too many individual characteristics that don't have anything to do with survival. They just eccentricities or something. They're just characteristics of the individual. Can't be just instinct. Because the instinct means it's mechanical, basically, because there's no soul. Because even religious people in the West, they say that humans have souls, but animals don't have souls. So therefore, if we eat them, they don't care. Because although they're not even alive, really, it's just going on by instinct. You have to undergo a lot of mental tricks to be able to think like that. Did you ever hear anyone say anything like that?
Mm.
Yeah. They do. Continuously. Did you ever hear people talk like that? Did anyone ever hear people talk like that other than me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the animals don't have soul. It's all instinct. But that doesn't explain everything. The fish, why do the fish, they have a hook in their mouth. And you're reeling them in. Why do they try to get away? It's not pain. It's just instinct. You're not causing them any pain. Don't feel bad about it. It's just instinct, survival instinct. Did you ever hear anyone say that? I've heard people say that. And the scientists say that. They've done a lot of research now and find out that the thing that causes pain in the brain doesn't exist in a fish, so therefore it's not possible for a fish to cause pain. So when you take them out of the water and they're flapping and it looks like they're suffering, but they're not actually suffering at all. And if you beat them with a stick or something to stop their flapping around because it's inconvenient for you, they don't suffer at all. So you can do that. If you pull them out in a net, they're flapping around, they can't breathe, they appear to be suffering. They're not suffering at all. They can't experience pain. So science supports inhuman behavior in this way. It's very terrible. To say it's terrible, that's enough. So this is all, so no one can, what to speak of understanding Krishna. This is what Maya does. Takes one's intelligence and makes it twist around into circles so that one, the most obvious things you can't understand. This is the potency of Maya. So Prabhupada would challenge this. So if there's no soul and life is just chemicals, can you take the chemicals? There's so many chemicals, it's just carbon and carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen, I think, are the organic, basic organic chemicals. So you can take all the chemicals, they're all here, and if life is just a combination of chemicals, find any dead body and just inject those chemicals into the body and bring it back to life. Can you do that, Mr. Scientist? And they go...
Sure.
Kal.
Yeah.
Don't worry, we'll do it tomorrow, we can do it. So this is illusion. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? And then tomorrow, on Saturday, Krishna willing, I'll just read Prabhupada's very short purport. Krishna had many, many friends of whom Sridham, Sudham, Subal were prominent. Okay. Which ones were prominent?
Sridham, Subal.
Easy, they all begin with S. Sridham, Subal, and
Sudham.
Yes. Out of those, who was most prominent?
Sridham.
But Subal also was very prominent. He also took part in very special readings. So, thus Krishna himself became Sridham, Sudham, and
Subal,
and entered their respective houses with their respective caps. But it was all Krishna. Quite wonderful. So, what is going to happen next? Oh, it's Saturday, we shall find out. Krishna willing. Okay, any questions or comments? Thank you. Did you work today? Or did you work today? Or?
No, I did a study.
Okay, no questions. Okay, thank you very much. You're all after a hard day's work.